Are you looking for a Columbus car dealership built on tradition and trust? Buyers Auto, family-owned since 1897, offers top new and pre-owned vehicles. Visit us or shop online at buyersauto.com. Buyers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.
Never go to the second location. Always trust your gut.
Hello, my name is Chrissy Champagne, and you are listening to Residue, a true crime podcast dedicated to keeping you paranoid. Here on Residue, we tell you the truth behind your favorite movies, and today we're talking about the 2002 film Vampire Clan. This movie is loosely based on the murder case known as the Vampire Killings. And before we get started, as you know, you can find me on Instagram at Residue Podcast, Facebook Residue, a true crime podcast, and TikTok at Residue, a true crime podcast. And as I always say, the best thing you could possibly do for any podcast that you love is leave a positive review. I just wanted to read a review that I saw today on Apple Podcasts, and it means the world to me. Like, you have no idea how thankful I am when you guys leave a positive review or you DM me and you let me know how much you love the show. Thank you so much. So this review reads, refreshing and interesting, 5 stars. I absolutely love listening to Residue. I am excited for a new episode. Thank you so much for your hard work and putting these out consistently. I am a crime podcast listener and your content is fresh and interesting. Keep doing what you're doing. Love it. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You are the best. And I do want to say, I'm still giving out stickers. I just mailed some out the other day. So if you do want a sticker, if you have left a positive review, just DM me, leave me your address. We'll chat a little bit and I will mail you a cute little card with some cute little stickers. Before we begin, you might hear that rain in the background. It is storming beyond belief today, which is very fitting because I have a pretty disturbing and scary story to tell you. And on that note, I do want to warn you that this episode will contain some references that may be disturbing to most listeners, and the story includes depictions of violence, murder. There are themes related to cult behavior, but it also contains many references to animal abuse and animal death, which some listeners may find upsetting because I found it very upsetting researching. I don't even want to talk about it myself, but I'll give you a warning before I have to tell you that part of the story, and then you can skip ahead, or you can just skip this episode altogether, and I will see you again next week. And before we begin, listener discretion is always advised. Vampire Clan is a 2002 American drama horror film directed by John Webb, and the movie is loosely based on a real murder case known as the Vampire Killings that occurred in the United States in 1996. It follows a group of troubled teenagers who become fascinated with the idea of vampirism and begin forming a small cult-like group that believes they are real vampires. And their leader, Rod Farrell, convinces the others to take part in dark rituals, drink each other's blood, and embrace a fantasy world where they possess supernatural powers. So reviews were mixed, and one reviewer said it had decent acting and tunes at times, slick directing, but on the whole, rubbed me the wrong way from every freaking angle. I just couldn't find an anchor to the story, and I truly, and I mean truly, despised the characters in it. I think that's the point, though, because these are not the greatest people that ever existed on the face of the earth. You're gonna hate them. I read through so many reviews of Vampire Clan, and it seemed to me that most people didn't quite understand this is a true story because a lot of the reviews would give the film 1 star and say terrible plot, but it was real life. This is what really happened. I'm going to read one for you. 1 star out of 10. Horrible. This is possibly the worst movie I have ever seen. While it has a bit of entertainment value if you're sick and twisted, the acting is terrible, the story is boring, and the teenagers are obnoxious. My impression of the kids in the movie, we're vampires, really? We drink blood and everything. Aren't we creepy? Yes, that is how they were. They were really like that in real life. So yeah, When you're watching it and maybe you didn't understand it was based on a true story, the characters can probably come off as obnoxious, but they weren't characters. They were real people that acted this way. This is one last review. The reviewer gave the film a 7 out of 10, saying this is actually based on a true case. If you go into this knowing this isn't a vampire movie and it's actually based on a true crime, you'll appreciate the film more. My ex-roommate got this for a party she was throwing, thinking it was a vampire movie, but I knew more about this case. The killer in the story tries to portray his reality as a vampire, but he's just a disturbed individual himself. This is one of those movies you'll enjoy if you know what really happened and what led into the movie. If you know the true crimes behind this movie, you are in for a nightmare fuel when you realize that this really happened. Roderick Farrell, known as Rod, was born March 28, 1980. He grew up without a dad. His parents married at around 16 years old, and they divorced 3 weeks after their marriage. So Rod was raised by his single mother, Sandra. Sandra Gibson was a single mother to only child, Rod, and he was born in Murray, Kentucky. This is a little over 100 miles northwest of Nashville, Tennessee. Now, authorities cited, according to a Yahoo.com article, that Rod had a troubling childhood, and this may have been the reason he could have possibly been drawn into this macabre world that he lived in. Now, according to this Yahoo.com article, Rod alleges that his maternal grandfather, Harold Gibson, raped him at age 5. Harold Gibson has never been charged in connection with Rod's claims. Life with his mother, Sandra, was not amazing. Sandra was the type of parent that thought the best way to parent was to be a best friend. She wasn't really the adult in the situation. She was an admitted sex worker and did bring many men around Rod during his childhood. And now, later on during Rod's trial, the prosecution did let the jury know that Sandra Gibson was a mentally ill woman who went so far as to attempt to have sex with a 14-year-old teen boy as part of this ritualistic act. And we're going to get more into those vampiric ritualistic acts, but Sandra participated in this type of behavior. Sandra also moved her young son between Murray, Kentucky and Eustace, Florida. So Rod never really found his grounding. He never really found a group of friends or any family members that were his foundation. Rod would also claim in the documentary series Killer Kids that his mother was the kind of mother that would just go along with everything he said. Like if he expressed an interest in something, she was full force behind him, and she would even participate in those interests. So his mother had this really obsessive interest in this role-playing game called Vampire the Masquerade. And of course, Rod picked up on this interest and it started to rub off onto him, and they would play the game together. And they would also really get involved in this vampirism type of lifestyle. They both dressed in all black. They both learned all that they could about vampires. And neighbors even said that they didn't even think that these two were mother and son. They thought that they were dating, that they were boyfriend and girlfriend, because they would often walk around town dressed as vampires, holding hands. And it didn't help much that Sandra was the type of mother that she would just pawn her child off onto her parents and say, you know what, I want to go out and party tonight, you take care of my kid. Rod had a wild imagination and he lived in a fantasy world. He loved to draw, paint. He loved to paint dragons, fairies, mythical creatures. He said, concrete reality has too many limitations set on it. In ninth grade, Rod got expelled, and this is when things started going downhill real quick. His mother, Sandra, says that he started smoking pot at age 14. He was doing acid, and when he got to Murray, Kentucky, he started using heroin and cocaine and shooting up with a needle. This is when his mother said he would start to rage. He would yell at his mother. He would be very abusive towards her. He would break furniture in the home. His mom said that his entire personality changed. So Rod and his mother are going back and forth between Florida and Kentucky, and he finally ends up in Murray High School. He's 16 years old. This is where he meets a boy named Jaden Murphy. So when Rod shows up to this school, Jaden Murphy is like the only other goth kid at this school. And now Rod is full on goth mode at this point. So Jaden says that he obviously noticed Rod. It's a very small town. What do they always say? This type of town is the town that everyone knows everyone. And of course, people like Rod and Jaden are going to stick out. So this is so strange to me, but Jaden says that when Rod showed up to school, everyone was like, you should fight him. He's like, why? Because you're both goth. You should fight. Fight to the death, see who the coolest goth in school is. Jaden was like, no. He said he followed Rod into one of his classrooms, tapped him on the shoulder and said, hey, my name's Jaden. Do you want to hang out? Do you want to be friends? Yeah. So there wasn't going to be any big 3 o'clock p.m. meet me in the parking lot fight between these two. There would be some fighting later. But at this point, they're becoming great friends. They liked the same things. And people in school thought that they were going to hate each other. But no, they ended up bonding. So they hit it off. And now Jaden says of Rod, Rod is his chosen one. Because every sire must have a chosen one. They all must have that one perfect person that would take over for them. If something was to happen to Jaden, then Rod would take over for him because Jaden was also involved in the vampirism. But this wasn't a joke to Jaden. Jaden took this seriously, as many people do. So Jaden and Rod, they're talking one night and Jaden says, hey, let's meet up. And they meet up. Jaden picks him up in a truck and he drives him to a cemetery. They go to that cemetery in the middle of the night. They cut their arms open and then they each drink each other's blood. And then they sit there and they meditate for a little bit. In the documentary, The Vampire Murders from 1999, Jaden is interviewed. Rod is also interviewed. I will have a link to that in my show notes. So Jaden explains that when they cut themselves, when a vampire cuts themselves, they, quote, take from each other. It's called feeding. So they're feeding and they take their blood into you and they become one with you for all eternity because not even death can separate you. So Jaden says he took Rod in. He loved him. He gave him a home. He gave him a new family. And Jaden says that he knew the dark side since he was 5 years old, so he could teach Rod everything he knows about the vampirism lifestyle. Jaden says that his uncle used to hunt, and he would come home, he would drain the blood from the animals, and he would put the blood into a mason jar, put a straw in that mason jar, and then sit on the front porch with his little nephew Jaden at age 5, and they would sip the blood from those mason jars. And Jaden says that his mother freaked the fuck out. She was like, this is disgusting. Do not do this ever again. But Jaden said he was instantly in love with drinking blood. I mean, Rod and Jaden seem like a match made in vampire heaven to become two best friends because Rod said he always loved this vampiric lifestyle. He wanted to be a vampire. He said, and I quote, one of the greatest gifts I could see fit on earth for anyone is to become a vampire. Now, you would think this is going to be the greatest friendship of all time. These two are really getting along. They really enjoy each other's company. Rod has his new sire. But the thing is that Jaden wasn't a violent person because the vampire lifestyle was actually a lifestyle that was really catching on. This lifestyle or subculture is a modern community inspired by gothic literature, film, and folklore, with members often identifying as real vampires, blood feeders, or energy vampires. And participants may incorporate vampire aesthetics such as fangs, gothic fashion, and some do engage in consenting feeding. So vampire lifestylers might dress up in vampire clothing, indulge in habits like sleeping in a coffin, and participate in the role-playing game Vampire the Masquerade, just like Rod and his mother were doing. Now, Jaden introduced Rod to all of his friends and all of his vampire clan members. So Rod was a part of their community, and Jaden was trying to engage him in this new family type of atmosphere that he had found. He met a girl named April Duden. Now, her nickname was Shy. A lot of them had nicknames. She is actually in the documentary, The Vampire Murders, and she's dressed up like this devil slash angel vampire with blood dripping down her mouth. And underneath her name, it says that she actually dressed up as one of Rod's fantasies in this documentary because she says that Rod is a beautiful person. He's charismatic, and life with him was awesome because you never knew what you were going to get. You could get the really sweet Rod or the really mean Rod. And that statement just threw me off because I'm like, what do you mean? He was chaotic and that felt awesome to you? And she said, you never know what you're going to get with Rod. He had an evil side, and he said that this evil side scared him. So April recalls one night she's walking with Rod and Jaden. And now this is really disturbing. It is involving animal abuse in the most horrific way, and it involves a kitten. So if you want to skip ahead, I'm not going to go super deep into this detail. Skip ahead about 30 seconds. So Jaden says, and April says, that Rod took this kitten that they saw walking down the street, and he said that he was petting the kitty 1 second, and then wham, he took the little kitten and he threw it up against a tree trunk, immediately killing the kitten. And then he said, you know what? I'm gonna do anything for a thrill. Like, that was thrilling to him. It jarred April. April couldn't believe that she just saw this. She said that Rod laughed after it happened. Then Jaden saw this, and Jaden was like, hell no. He was already like ridiculously over anything Rod was doing. And he was like, this is it. You don't just go harm innocent animals. This is not what this is all about to us. I mean, this scared Jaden. It angered Jaden. Jaden wanted nothing at all to do with Rod anymore. I mean, not only this, Rod is threatening his life constantly. So Jaden is like, you're done. We don't want you to be a part of our vampire clan that we have going on. So what does Rod do? Rod creates his own vampire clan. And on November 23rd, 1996, Rod debuted his vampire clan, which involved Scott Anderson, 16 years old, Charity Kesey, 16 years old, and Charity, she wanted to marry Rod. Then there was Dana Cooper, 19 years old. Later, we would have Heather Zoe Wendorf, age 15, enter this new vampire clan headed by Rod Farrell. So these kids that join Rod's vampire clan, they're the outcast in school. They're kids that didn't feel like they belonged anywhere. They just wanted to fit in. They wanted to belong. And Rod gave them a place to do that. I mean, we had Charity Kesey, who's in trouble at home constantly. She's 16 years old because she loved Rod and her dad hated him. Her dad was like, I don't want you talking to him. I want you staying away from him. And then we had Scott Anderson, who was a year older than Rod, but he didn't really have any friends. He didn't have many friends because he was a quiet kid. And then Dana Cooper, the oldest of the group at 19 years old, but also didn't have any friends, not a very popular kid. And now I gotta stop saying vampire clan because this was definitely a cult. Rod was definitely creating his own little cult, and he was very charismatic to these kids. He even decided, you know what? I'm not gonna go by Rod anymore. I'm going to take on the persona of a 500-year-old vampire called Visago. Now, Visago was a character that he actually created for himself when he became obsessed with that role-playing game, Vampire the Masquerade. So he took that character out of that game, and he became that character. And in fact, any time Rod would do something in town, he would mark his territory with a red V for Visago. This was his alter ego. He starts telling people in town and he starts telling his cult that he needs blood for energy. And his mother is supporting him in all of this. He was full on immersed into this fairy tale world, and his mom started getting involved in it too. Like I said, she was getting involved in the occult along with Rod. She started wearing the black clothing, and they even painted a pentagram in the middle of their living room floor. So Rod says during a prison interview, "My mother actually encouraged all forms of free thinking and self-expression. They even created an altar in their living room with candles and spell books." So like I said, she wasn't his parent, she was his friend. But Rod says that he does not blame his mother. Now, Rod would take his vampire cult to the Vampire Hotel. This was an abandoned hotel in Murray, Kentucky. Now, this hotel looks like a burned-out bomb shelter, and Rod and these kids, because come on, they're kids, they would hang out here, they would perform rituals, and to initiate members into the cult, Rod would cut himself and feed you his own blood. Now, Rod says, when they drink his blood, he becomes their parent, their watcher, their guide. He wasn't this persona anymore. He was a full-time vampire, Vasago. Oh, God, Rod. So he said that he provided something better for these kids who were outcast. They were a part of his cult. They were a part of his family. They were all rejecting society. Now, Rod's got all of these kids feeding on blood. Where are they going to get the blood? Now, I'm going to talk about something that is really 100% incredibly disturbing, and I don't even want to, I'm going to say it as quick as I can, but you're going to need to skip ahead right now. This has to do with an animal shelter in Murray, Kentucky on October 14th, 1996. Please skip ahead about 2 minutes. So workers arrive to this animal shelter, and they walk in. They can hear a lot of yelping and barking. This is a story that is told on the documentary series Killer Kids. About 60 dogs were brutalized inside of that animal shelter. I'm not going to go into the details. They do say the details on this Killer Kids documentary. It's incredibly disturbing. I've honestly never heard anything like this. I'm talking 60 dogs and puppies incredibly brutalized. The whole town is losing it. The whole town is freaking out. Of course. Valid freak out moment. So nobody knows who did this. They first think maybe a pack of wolves got in to the animal shelter, but then they notice that the gate into the shelter and the land, the lock on the gate is cut open. Not only that, there is a V written in blood in the lawn. No one is ever caught for this incident, but people in town are suspecting that it is Rod, what with his history of animal abuse, with his history of drinking blood and writing the letter V on things. I mean, come on. Around this time, Rod starts talking to a girl that he knew in middle school. Now remember, he was always going back and forth from Eustis, Florida to Murray, Kentucky. He met this girl named Heather in middle school while living in Florida. And Heather Wendorf was now 15 years old, and she begins a friendly relationship with Rod. They're talking on the phone all the time, and these two are living in two different states. They are on the phone sometimes 8 to 9 hours a day, so much so that Rod's mom gets a phone bill that she cannot pay, and they have to turn their phone off. So Heather's parents, Rod's parents, they're getting pretty annoyed with this relationship. Now, Heather was this cool, artsy chick. She dressed kind of goth, but also kind of punk. You know, it seemed like Heather might have been rebelling a little bit. They said she used to wear this backpack where she would take a Barbie doll and wrap a noose around its neck, and then the Barbie would swing back and forth from the bottom of her backpack. And then you look at her sister, Jennifer, who's about a year older than her, and Jennifer is the athletic, preppy type who only hung out with jocks. So Heather seemed to be rebelling a bit by wanting to get involved in this vampire cult with Rod. Now, their relationship starts getting pretty intense, and it's becoming more of a romantic relationship now. So one day, Heather is sitting with her sister, Jennifer, and now Jennifer had this football player type of boyfriend jock guy who was pretty abusive. And Jennifer is confiding in her sister and telling her, "Oh my God, my boyfriend it's not good, you know? And Heather goes, listen, I know this guy, Rod, from Murray, Kentucky. You used to know him. He lived in Florida. But, you know, he could take care of that boyfriend of yours if you want. Jennifer's like, what are you talking about? I don't want him to die. I just, like, kind of want to get out of this relationship. So Jennifer doesn't really think much about it. She's like, my sister's just being weird. I don't think she really knows a guy that would kill, does she? So it is a month after the animal shelter break-in, and Rod's already planning a trip. He's got this idea. Let's take the cult on the road and let's go to New Orleans, and we'll all get an apartment together and we'll share it, and we'll never return to Kentucky again. Rod is 16 years old. No, wait. No. He's 500. Right? He's a 500-year-old vampire at this time, and he doesn't have a car. That's crazy. So he's 16 years old, and he didn't have a car. So Scott Anderson had a car, this really shitty car. There's no way this car is going to barely make it two blocks, but they all decide to load into this car, and first thing they're going to do is drive to Florida to pick up 15-year-old Heather. So we have Rod Farrell, then Scott Anderson, and Charity and Dana. They all get in this car and they drive all the way to Florida. So they arrive in Florida. They go to pick up Heather. I mean, once they pick Heather up, they immediately get to work. They go straight to a cemetery and Heather becomes a vampire. She feeds off of Rod, and then they actually take Heather home for a little bit. So she goes home and she hangs out with her parents for a little while. She sits in the living room. She watches TV. She goes up to her room to pack without her parents knowing what the hell is going on. She leaves a goodbye note. And in the note, she writes, please don't come and find me. I'm never coming back. Don't follow us. And then Heather sneaks out of her home and she goes to meet up with the vampire gang. Okay, so the kids are on their way. They're on their way to New Orleans. They're driving. All of a sudden, Scott's car gets a flat tire. They're like, shit, all he's got is a little donut tire in the back. So they put the donut tire on and they're like, there's no way that we can keep traveling in this shitty ass car. We've got to do something. And Heather says, oh, wait a minute. We can steal my parents' SUV. It's in the garage. We just need to get the keys. So she tells them, listen, my parents always keep the keys on their nightstand. So why don't we sneak into the house and we'll steal the keys off the nightstand? And there were some other things I wanted anyway. Like, I forgot that I wanted to take my mother's pearl necklaces, and I also wanted my dad's pocket knife. So Rod decides, okay, here's what we'll do. Scott and I will break into your parents' house. Rod says he walked straight into the Wendorf's garage. Nothing was locked. Not one single door in that home was locked. So Rod said it was pretty easy to get in. And once he did get in, he figured, you know what, I might need a weapon in case someone wakes up. So he tried to find a weapon and he found a crowbar. He says he walks into the home and the first thing that he sees is Heather's dad asleep on the couch. 49-year-old Richard Wendorf was asleep on his couch and his wife, Naomi Ruth Queen, was in the shower. Heather's parents had no idea she left the house. They were waiting up for their daughter Jennifer to get home from her part-time job at a grocery store, and they were just enjoying their night together. When Rod was interviewed for the Vampire Killers documentary, he says the most chilling shit I've ever heard. He says, Scott and I danced around his body in a foolish manner. To not know we are there and you are asleep and I hold your fate in my hands. And then I began to strike his head with the crowbar until his life was taken. And one single voice came forth to me and said, fuck it. It was simple as that. It just said, fuck it. And that's when I brought the crowbar down. Rod said, I said to that man, don't move or I will beat the fuck out of you, but he moved. So I did wail his ass. Those were his words after he was caught. He was in an interrogation room. He says, yes, I did. I wailed his ass. I lost control. And Scott, he was in shock. He couldn't help. He didn't do anything. He said that Scott stood there like, what the hell? I thought we were coming in here to grab some keys. Now, at the same time, Heather's mother, Naomi Ruth, she comes into the living room with a cup of coffee. She's like, what the hell is going on? Can you even imagine? She's walking into the living room. Rod said that she lunged at him, spilled her coffee all over him, tried to claw him, grab his wrist, so he beat her. This was a brutal, absolutely brutal crime. Rod beat Richard multiple times with that crowbar, fracturing both his skull and his ribs, almost instantly knocking him out. And when Ruth found them, he bludgeoned her to death. And before Rod could leave the scene of his crime, he burned the letter V into Richard's arm. Rod and Scott, they find the keys that they were looking for to the SUV, and they drive this SUV back to where the girls were waiting in Scott's car. Now, they get back, and Heather is sensing something feels off, something feels wrong. And Rod says to her, this 15-year-old girl, listen, your mom and dad are dead. Heather loses her damn mind. She's freaking out. She's freaking out so much that Dana has to actually get on top of her and hold her down to restrain her. And at this same time, Heather's teenage sister, Jennifer, is arriving home from her part-time job. She comes home late. She's trying to be quiet as she enters her house, and she sees her dad asleep on the couch. So she's tiptoeing around, trying to get ready for bed. And then she sees her mom lying on the floor, and she runs back to her father and realizes what is happening. What is going on? She calls 911. She tells them, there is blood everywhere. I don't know where my sister is. She is gone. And detectives show up. And Jennifer tells those detectives, listen, I don't know if this has anything to do with anything, but my sister told me that she knew a guy that would kill my boyfriend if I wanted him dead. Jennifer tells the detectives all about Rod Farrell and her sister's relationship with him, and immediately police call Murray, Kentucky, and a manhunt is in full effect. And almost immediately, police get a lead because Charity, she calls her mother, who is a corrections officer, and she asks her mom for money. She tells her mom they're in trouble and they need money. So her mom says, okay, that's okay. I will wire you the money. I'm going to wire it Western Union. You got to go to this Howard Johnson Hotel to pick it up. And then Charity's mother has to do the hardest thing she would ever have to do as a mother. She calls the police and tells them what is going on and where exactly they can find her daughter and her vampire cult. The moment these teenagers arrive at that Howard Johnson Hotel, there are like 17 cops surrounding them. They are immediately arrested. Rod actually walks himself straight over to a cop car, puts his hands behind his back, and says, okay, let's go. The kid had no remorse. He was absolutely stone cold. And he said, I have to remain cool. I have to remain totally cool in this situation because my disciples, they're looking up to me. They need me to be their rock. He just seemed so narcissistic and just insane. And the detectives are saying that he was completely proud of everything he did. He seemed completely proud, and he confessed right away. Like, he wanted to tell everyone what he did. So after a few days of driving through four states, November 28th, 1996, these kids are arrested in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. The teenagers were held in a juvenile detention center to await their fate. And on February 12th, 1998, almost 2 years later, a then 18-year-old Rod Farrell pleaded guilty to the murders. And he did claim that the other members of the cult that were traveling with him were all innocent, except for Scott Anderson, obviously, because he was an accessory to the crime. Because Charity, Dana, and Heather did not go to Heather's home that night. It was just the two boys. So Rod's attorneys are going to argue that he is insane. And he was diagnosed with schizopal personality disorder and then Asperger's syndrome. Schizopal personality disorder. I had to look up what that was because I did not know what that was, but it is not to be confused with schizoid personality disorder or schizoaffective. It's a mental disorder characterized by thought disorder, paranoia, a characteristic form of social anxiety, derealization, and transient psychosis with unconventional beliefs. The jury came back 12-0 on the case of Rod Farrell, and Judge Jerry T. Lockett sentenced Rod to death. Now, Charity Kesey was convicted on two counts of third-degree murder, robbery with a gun or deadly weapon, and burglary armed with a weapon or explosives. And Charity, who never even went near Heather's home, was sentenced to 10.5 years in a state prison. And then Dana Cooper was convicted on all those same charges as well, but was given a 17.5-year prison sentence. Scott Anderson was convicted of the same charges as Rod Farrell, and he was sentenced to life in prison. Heather Wendorf was freed by a grand jury because she testified that she didn't know her parents would be harmed. And according to a Tampa Bay Times article, the sheriff said that during a trial in February, a friend of Rod's in Kentucky said that Heather once wrote a letter to her brother, James Elkins, and in that letter, Heather said she wanted to get rid of her parents so she could be with Farrell. So this witness that testified, who was friends with Rod, said that Heather was telling Rod that the only way she could possibly be with him is if her parents were gone. But Heather did testify before a grand jury, and she did say, "I never wanted him to go near my parents." So for 2 years, Rod held the record as the youngest inmate on death row. But in November of 2000, the Florida Supreme Court reduced his sentence to life in prison. And Charity was released from prison in March 2006. And Dana Cooper was released from prison in October 2011. In December of 2018, Scott Anderson was resentenced, and he was given a sentence of 40 years in prison. He was also given credit for the 22 years that he already served, and this makes Scott Anderson eligible for release in 2031. Rod Farrell will be in prison for the rest of his life. Now, when Rod was originally sentenced in his first hearing, and he was sentenced to death, the judge looked at him and said, "I think you are a very disturbed man, and I think your family failed you." That same judge also stated that he thinks that Sandra Gibson should also be on trial for this. Well, at least one of Rod's fantasies, one of Rod's dreams was dashed, because he stated, "Going to the electric chair is a fantasy of mine. I used to dream about it since I was 9 years old. I don't care how I die, as long as I do so. I have nothing left here on earth." Yeah, nothing but an entire life sentence behind bars. Stay safe and stay paranoid. Residue is created, hosted, written, researched, edited, and produced by me, Chrissy Champagne. Thank you so much for joining me here today, and I hope to see you again next Tuesday.
Are you looking for a Columbus car dealership built on tradition and trust? Buyers Auto, family owned since 1897, offers top new and pre-owned vehicles. Visit us or shop online at buyersauto.com. Buyers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.